Hey everybody, welcome to Christian AF. This is Jen. I'm actually not in today's episode. I was quite sick the day that we had this interview scheduled, and so Jesse and Evan just ran with it, but I just wanted to let you know who we're talking to and what we're talking about today. We have Ben Coppin and Courtney Bandico. Ben is the writer and director of the film The Pastor's Kid, which is a pretty awesome new take on a Christian movie. And so we also interviewed him, as well as Courtney Bandico, who's the lead actress in the film. So the boys talk a lot about the movie and thoughts and Ben's process and all those good things. So sit back, relax, grab a drink. Here we go.
Welcome to the Christian AF podcast,
where we're famous for awkward starts.
We're famous for awkwardness. So we're here with some new friends that we just met 45 seconds ago. We have Ben Ironside, Coppin, right? Coppin, Coppin,
mm-hmm.
Coppin,
Coppins. Yep. There you go. The Ironside is the cool part. The rest of it you can just throw away. So it's all good.
And then we have Courtney. I'm going to mess up your name. Brandenko.
I love it. That's really like kind of like anybody's that ever messed up my name. I like it. That's the one I haven't heard before. Bandico.
Bandico. Bandico.
Okay. Nobody gets it right. And I kind of love it.
Courtney Bandico.
Brandelko.
Brandelko. Okay. Sorry. I'm trying to, Brandelko. I apologize.
No, it's Bandico.
Bandico. I can't see the from here.
By
the
I end, don't want to get actually accused of spreading misinformation. It's Bandico.
Perfect. Well, thank you guys for joining us today. We'll get into a little bit more in a second why you're here. Where you guys, have a movie that we're going to talk about. So we'll get into that, but real quick, as per usual, we're drinking some beer, and it's earlier for you guys than it is us. Welcome to
the Midwest.
The Midwest, yeah. So we're drinking Pavo Real from our go-to Prairie Street, because it's nearby, and the Mexican lagers.
Mexican lager, yeah. Decent. Yeah. Steve made a good one.
I love a Mexican lager.
It is.
I've got a Diet Coke that I'm rocking here. I have a little bit of a
Diet Coke.
It's a big one. It just looks baby on the camera. But I have a massive Diet Coke addiction, and every time I'm like, I'm gonna slow down, I'm gonna like get off it, and then I get like edits in or something. I have to pull like a late night and just start popping them. It's bad. Mm-hmm. It's bad, guys.
And the caffeine. The caffeine kills me.
No, I can get. Yeah. What you got there, Courtney?
I'm drinking English breakfast tea with milk.
Very good.
Ooh,
you guys are nice
with
and
a dash of milk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you're just making us all feel like just like lame little college students that are just crap, and you're like, lots of dog.
We're the squares.
Yeah,
we're the ones who made the R-rated film, but we're the squares.
There you go. I know, right?
Yeah, I'm the pastor, and I'm drinking at 2 in the afternoon. So
yeah,
there's
if you didn't catch it on, awesome. Evan is our church's pastor. But you'd never know. No, I'm just kidding.
You would never know. That's
Today, if any of our listeners have caught on, we probably said this in the intro that we haven't recorded yet, but Jen is not with us. She is out sick. So we are doing this interview, just the gays.
We're doing this as a, since they did a ladies podcast, it's kind of the guys.
Yeah, we're following up with.
Yeah. Yeah. So Jen, even though you're listening,
she's on the call, but she's not going to talk. So thank you guys for joining us. We appreciate it. We ended up finding you guys through an email. Somebody emailed us on your behalf, I believe. You have a movie that, and I wasn't sure. Did you film a cinema piece?
I'll take it.
Did you write it as well or more direct it, Ben?
Yeah. So my wife and I wrote it together and then I directed it. Yeah.
Nice.
So,
So it's the Pastor's Kid is the,
The movie.
Is the movie. Yeah. And we blew through it. And I, I don't know if it took us a while to book this, partially because we're in insane times right now, but we've been requested by several people to look at their Christian things and other stuff. And people that don't know our podcast, I'm like, are you sure you want us to?
Right. Because
we've ripped into a few movies on our own.
Yeah.
And I was like, let me just like preview this first before I feel bad about it.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, is this a left on the vein of Left Behind this on a vein of good? And it was really good. I watched it this morning.
Yeah. So really he's fresh.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
You wrote and directed, and
Or
you're with your wife writing, and then you were the main character in it, Riley. And I was shocked, and that's why I said I was like, let's blow through this and try to decide, and then we're like, watched it, and we're like, okay, yeah, I think we can interview them. That's fine.
Awesome. Candy. There you go.
Yeah. So Ben, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, you go first. You had a good question.
Oh, yeah. Sure. The one, there's obviously faith centered undertones throughout the film. Struggle, eternal struggles. It's realistic struggle. It's not like if you've ever seen God's Not Dead, which is a very not realistic struggle. This is a very realistic struggle and a realistic. We see this all the time. What was the inspiration behind it? Do you have a faith background? Do you have a
mm-hmm. Yeah. Like so, that. You know, I grew up in the Midwest, Indiana, in the church. And, you know, my mom worked with, there was a ministry called Youth for Christ. And so, you know, growing up and we had some things in my family, like with grandparents and things that were alcoholics and different stuff that happened. My, you know, certain people in my family had struggled with these things and we'd seen them come to faith and, you know, had these redemption moments, you know, but, you know, I have a history of some people in my family were the alcoholics and then they came to faith and then they swung super legalistic and were like, you can't wear sandals to church, you know, and or like after like they had been drinking and passed out, you know, for you know, years and years. And so saw that kind of like learned about those aspects a little bit as I was growing up. That my mom had worked in ministry with Youth for Christ. And so a lot of like at-risk teens who were like cutters, suicidal, selling their, ADHD? Medication at school, their pills and stuff, you know, a lot of that stuff. And, you know, bringing faith into the realities of the world, as opposed to, you know, Christianity and the church being in their own little box, right? You know what I mean? I think often people are raised with this idea that, you know, God resides in the steeple church, but then you go out into the real world and it's, you know, you live a different way or have a different perspective. And so for me, faith has never been, this squeaky clean, easy thing, you know, there's a wrestle and you're allowed to question God and be mad at God and have those discussions. You see hypocrisy in the church and there's aspects of needing to step away maybe sometimes or switch churches. Like that's the reality of like, if you're going to be a long-term Christian who believes in these things is there's going to be seasons of these things you'd experience. So anyways, grew up, loved film, watched a ton of film. I think I shared the story in high school. We had the public library that had DVDs you could rent. And I really got into like the Sundance type movies that were in, you know, this section. And so like in the, you know, early 2000s, you know, late 90s, it was like 13 was a movie. It was a lot of teen, you know, stuff. Yeah. There's one with like Ryan Gosling called United States of Leland. One I'll suggest to everyone is one called Manic. It's got Don Cheadle, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Zooey Deschanel when they're all young. Uh-huh. I love it. I actually saw that film and was just like, man, like, why can't we take, like, I'm experiencing all these stories, right, of like kids going through all this hardness in life. Then I'm seeing things like these Sundance movies that are being raw and honest about these journeys, and they're taking it seriously and not just glossing over it. And then you go to the Christian film world, and I remember I would like buy up these like Christian movies from, it was christiancinema.com was the website at the time, and I'd buy a whole bunch of them, spend all my allowance and get these DVDs, and I'd throw them, and I'd be like, okay. And you know, you'd get a handful that were like good and decent, and then you'd have some that were more on the cheesy side and all that. And so, you know, that's always stuck with me. And then, you know, I moved out to LA, went to film school, you know, I worked in horror for a while in LA at Lionsgate. And eventually, and I had wanted to figure out how do we tell a story of faith like this? And I'd done some short films in college that was like, I don't want to make an edgy, raw Christian movie. I just want to tell a story honestly, because I think that's where you have these testimonies that you hear that are so powerful and authentic and real. And then when they get translated over to film, a lot of times they get watered down and PG'd. Like a good example is, and I won't say what Christian film it is, but in one of them, a woman gets cancer, right? And you know, it's like the end of the first movie. And then the second movie, she like shows up and she's like, the cancer's gone. And it's just like miraculously everything's fixed. And I'm just like, that though that happens, right, where people do get healed or things miraculously happen, it's like those aren't the majority of the stories. The majority of the stories is I had this cancer that went away and came back and God was with me, right, through the entire struggle. But there's this habit within Christian film to gloss over that struggle and to just get to the resolution. And so long story short, I ended up working at a church for a season, and pastor's kid was one of my friends' story. It was her real testimony. I had no idea that was her journey. And it was one Easter, and we were rushing to get a testimony together for the Easter service. And she's like, I'll tell my story. And I'd worked with her for years, and we filmed her story. And it's basically, you know, I'll give a brief synopsis if that's cool, is, you know, basically she was raised with an alcoholic mother. They were wealthy and her mom was a functioning alcoholic, had a great like job. But she's like, I had to raise my little brother while my mom was like passed out drunk, you know, and I would have to like wake her up to take us to school, wake her up to take us to get her to work. And then she's like, when I got older, my mom got clean and became a Christian and then became an executive pastor at a church, which means she kind of runs the business of the church, you know, the business side. And so she's like, everyone praised my mom as being this like amazing conversion story. And look at all this. But no one saw the pain that I went through as a kid. No one acknowledged what I had to deal with. And so now here I had to wake my mom up for work when she was passed out drunk, you know, when I was a kid. And now I want to go out past 7 o'clock as a high schooler. And my mom's saying no. And she's just like, you know, so she's like, so basically that riff like caused her to push God away, to push the church away, to push her mom away, because she just felt like no one saw or acknowledged her pain. And so that led her into drinking and partying and selling drugs and some of these other things in college. And she's like, just basically like, I was just trying to get as far away as I could. And then ultimately there was an experience that she was brought into where she got offered another path of, does she want to continue down this road or does she want to take a different path? And so our film, when we made it, I was like, I want it to be 90 minutes of her heart wrestling with this and not just gloss over the fact that she has this pain and this trauma growing up. And basically this idea that, you know, this event happens in the beginning of our movie and it sort of forces these triggers to happen of this trauma throughout her everyday life. You know, I make a joke that in a traditional Christian movie, she'd been a drug addict in the beginning. And by minute 15, she'd have been saved and clean and everything would be
converting
fine.
Other people.
Converting other people. Whereas for me, I was like, I want the movie to be God slowly opening her heart. And even if that's like a slower pacing or more of an everyday, a day in the life of kind of film, like that's what's important to me, is that in the mundaneness of her everyday life, these triggers are popping up, these flashbacks that she sort of suppressed over time. And what do you do with that? You know? Anyways, the goal, like just to sort of long answer is, you know, the goal wasn't to make an edgy Christian movie. It was to tell her story the most honest way we could. And I think that that's something that this generation, this new generation doesn't want the like BS of like candy coated and all this stuff. It's like, no, let me sit in it and wrestle with these things and don't force answers on me. So that's what we tried to do, is like, I've been trying to clarify that a lot of times where it's like, we didn't just throw F words in there just to be like, we're the edgy, cool Christians. It's like, no, this is just how people talk. So just show the realities of how people talk and live. And not trying to be like, oh, we're cool or any, does that make sense?
Yeah, of course.
And that, I mean, that was one, obviously, when you walk into a Christian, you know, titled Christian movie, basically is you don't expect the swearing. You don't expect active drug use. You don't expect real life situations to be going on like that and people struggling through it. And that was like a nice little, oh, okay. This isn't like a fluff piece. This is, you're getting into some reality here. Courtney, did you, have you had roles like this in the past where like, how did this, what attracted you to this little spot?
No, so I feel very blessed that this was, I think, the first feature that, you know, I was given the opportunity to carry, where, you know, it was my responsibility to carry the arc of the main character story. You know, you pray for opportunities to do that, you know, because, you know, as a working actor, you're kind of just trying to find a job here and there and all that. But then you get these opportunities to really stretch and make some art. And I think this movie explores what's the cost of somebody not feeling seen just because there's a way to do things. And then we see it. We see mm-hmm. her. It's just that, you know, we see her struggling by herself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And your acting was fantastic throughout that, by the way. I specifically like all that stuff. The cinematography in it was great as well. The thing that was kind of fun to me to see your representation of the Jesus figure in that play out, which I'm sure you've been asked about several times. How did that come out? If you want to explain that really quick for listeners, or
the white Jesus, I call him white Jesus. Is that
it? With flip-flops.
Yeah, I know
that his shirt.
Yeah, with flip-flops. You know, for me, and this is where, you know, with our film, there is a lot that is where we leave questions or we don't answer things to try to let the audience kind of draw their own conclusion. It's so funny because a lot of people love the white Jesus, but then we screened the film to some older people and they did not like the white Jesus. They were a little bit offended by the white Jesus. But my whole pitch with the white Jesus, or the idea in my head, was I wanted a way to represent this idea of the Jesus she's raised within her mind. You know what I mean? This idea of, like, I think we've all been raised with the white Jesus of this, you know, kind of false Jesus in a way that's like, you know, I don't know. Yeah. He's the nice hippie guy, or he's the, you know, I don't know, just however her mind kind of was viewing this version of Jesus. And have that not necessarily, at least in my mind, not necessarily represent the real Jesus. Is that she, the lamb to me, that experience with the lamb is more so when she's truly feeling the presence of God or having that experience in those quiet moments, I feel like, as opposed to this idea of who she thought Jesus was. Yeah. And so for me, the film is very much like a deconstruction story in reality of her kind of like deconstructing all of these aspects, and white Jesus is a part of that. Is it's like, what do I really think about Jesus? What do I really think about God? You know, in the real testimony of my friend, she said, you know, at that moment at the end of the movie, I don't want to spoil it too much, but when she's had this experience, she's like, I realized in that moment that God loved me so much, he would chase me halfway around the world for me to know I was loved. Yeah. And so that's where, for me, I'm like, we put on a lot of these images of who Jesus is or who God is. And we do that through the church, through how Christians act, through our media, through all of these things. And sometimes, like I say, the majority of times those can be really positive and helpful, but sometimes those can create this false representation of Jesus that we have to deconstruct and really wrestle with. Who do we really think, like in our, the quietness of ourselves, who do we really think God is, and who do we really think Jesus is? So that was kind of the white Jesus was my comedic way of trying to deal with some of those. So
it was really funny, actually.
Yeah, it was a nice little comedy spot. Yeah.
Especially that the first scene he's in is really, it's a funny interaction for sure.
Well, and even the second one that I love too, is when he walks up and she literally tells him to F off.
Yeah. Get away.
And he walks off. And then she breaks down crying. Yeah. And what it just shows is she is putting on this front of, I don't want God. I don't want you. I don't want to have these things. And then as soon as she, in her head, God leaves, or Jesus leaves her, she loses it because she can't keep this front up anymore, you know? So anyways, sorry. At least that's my interpretation. You can interpret it however you want. But
Now, did the person that the story is based on, was she involved in, or he, I don't know, the person, were they involved in
we did our original testimony video together, and then I had her and her husband came over to our house, and we did a 4-hour interview with her where basically she just talked and just gave us, like, there's a moment where this guy drops off drugs at her house, totally happened, like totally real thing, and she's just like sharing, like, yeah, you know, my dealer, like supplier of my drugs, like he had no nose because his nose had sunk in because he'd done so much cocaine. Mm-hmm. So we were trying to figure out, like, can we, like, you know, CGI the guy's nose or something, but we mm-hmm. weren't able to do that. But that's one of those things people have asked me, like, did that really happen? And I'm like, yeah, that really happened. And so basically she did this 4-hour interview, and then she read all the scripts and kind of gave us feedback and notes. Mm-hmm. And then towards the end, she's just like, it's your story. Go from here. Like, it's inspired by my journey, but you have my permission to like do it how you need to do it. But she yeah. approved the scripts and everything, and then just kind of let us go. So, yeah.
The it is fascinating. Courtney, crying on camera. I've always wondered this. How hard is it to cry on cue? Every time I watch a movie, I'm like,
how? You did very good
at it. You did very well. I mean, tears are flowing.
Thank you. That's so funny. Like, so I don't call it crying on cue, because mm-hmm. I know some actresses that can mm-hmm. just like sort of just like kind of conjure that bodily feeling mm-hmm. of like and eke out water from their eyes. And I just don't know. I wish I could do that. Yeah. My life would be a lot easier. but like I don't really call it like crying on cue, because mm-hmm. I actually have to be living that experience
yeah.
for emotion to come out, whether there's water coming out of my eyes or yeah. not. Mm-hmm. That so, and it's funny. So I don't know how I do it. Like I really feel like I prepare the character and I think a lot about it. And then it's funny, I said this in a different interview too. And then I just think when it comes to the day, the time, the moment, you just sort of have to like surrender and say a prayer and mm-hmm. just, because I feel like that's my only answer is just like really, if I'm really living what that person's going through,
yeah,
then the emotion, the tears, whatever it is, it'll happen. Because if it's really true, it's happening. And then even, it's so funny, I don't want to give too much away, but there was, you know, the one scene we were shooting, very vague here. But I would even say to Ben, take 5, 6, you know, I said to him, just admitting that, hey, I'm nowhere near where she is emotionally mm-hmm. at this moment. And then he just gave me a moment. It doesn't even take that long. It's just, I needed to just breathe for a sec and get back in and then go. So mm-hmm. that was honestly a luxury too, because sometimes, you know, on a busy film set, the bigger mm-hmm. ones are sort of like, you're on their time. You do it.
Crank it out.
You're like, okay. yeah, crank it out. And I'm like, okay, I don't know. I don't know how. But with Ben, you know, if it is over and over again, I think it's fine to just say at some point, hey, yeah. Can I guess I could get back in that? Cause I've just done it a few times. But yeah, I just think it's you have to be very delicate with yourself and, it be about so much more than that visual of water coming out of your eyes. It has to be about so much more than that. Because if you're worried for a second about that, then you're just automatically not living the character's life.
I was just going to say real quick, and then I'll keep it quick, but something we didn't realize until after when we started doing some interviews about the film, and I didn't know this, is Courtney had said that she was very intentional of when she was around her friends and different people, you wouldn't really see her cry. And then as soon as you got behind closed doors, because it was her putting on this front with everyone, like this pressure building up. And then as soon as she's alone, you're seeing her break down again. But she doesn't want anyone to see that. So that was something intentional. I had no idea.
It is so funny because we did shoot this a while ago, and Ben and I were just talking about it, and I completely forgot that I had made that choice. I said, okay, we don't see her cry in front of people. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was important to me because, you know, I think that says a lot about, we just don't know what somebody's going through. And I felt it important to illustrate that hey, how often do we, you know, go in the bathroom and cry for ourselves, or just have this moment with ourselves and we're struggling. And then we go out in the world and put on that face.
Yeah. And especially with the background of the character too, is, I mean, if you were running the, the household essentially for everyone as a child. You probably have that front anyway that you're already built. So like that flows really well with the character. Did you have much background in church culture and stuff before all this? Did you grow up going to church or Christian?
Yeah, I mean, when I was a child, I went to church. You know, I went I grew up in the church. You know, my parents were Christian, and then I think when I was a teenager, I kind of said this isn't for me necessarily. And then I think I never really went away from spirituality. Mm-hmm. However, so I consider myself deeply spiritual. And then I just think my journey to living this moral spiritual life has been just one of being a student of all of the religions, I would say, because I do think we're all talking about the same thing, which is this universal connectivity. And, you know, you can call it the universe, you can call it God, but I think we're all talking about this, you know, thing that's looking out for us, that has our back, that loves us, that we can lean on when we're struggling. And then, you know, we talk about faith all the time. You know, we just have to have faith, you know, that everything's going to be okay. And I'm going to lean on this thing. And then, you know, and sometimes I do call it God, and sometimes I call it love. Sometimes I call it connectivity and stuff. But yeah. And so that's my personal, you know, journey with spirituality.
Yeah.
Nice.
And all that.
What was really cool too, is before we even got into the film, we kind of had this, like, it was supposed to be a read through, right, of the script, Courtney, but it ended up just being like a religion talk where we were all like sitting down being like, so what were you raised in? And what were you raised in? And what did you see? And what did you see? And trying to just have everyone feel like whatever baggage they had, whether they, you know, still were, you know, or considered themselves a Christian or not. It's like, let's talk about these things that we'd all been experienced and kind of hurt by or seen or felt, both the positive and the negative, right? You know, of those things, and bring it to the film and allow that to kind of speak through the film. Because I think that's one of those things. It's like, if we can get, like, hopefully the film is meant to be where someone who is not of the faith or burnt by the church can come and watch the film and see themselves in. And someone who has been going to church their whole life can go and watch the film and see themselves in. And you can bridge that gap between these groups to talk about some of these things. Like, yeah, I've made a joke even before that. It's like, if you've been a Christian long enough, you've been either kicked out of a church or left a church for a reason. And it's like, because you have churches made of people, all religions and organizations are made of people. And so things are going to happen where, you know, relationships are hurt or burnt and changes are made. And it's like, I think instead of hiding those things and trying to act like the church is this perfect being, and then all the scandal stuff comes out, it's like, if we were more open about it up front, I think there could be a lot more healing and connection than we realize. So anyways, I hope the film can be that a little
bit. And I thought that was wonderful. You know, it turned into a fitting rehearsal powwow for all of us. Because, you know, we have this piece. And then if you, the most authentic way to start from, you know, the most authentic step one is, okay, here's this piece. Where do I fit in all that? What do I bring to the table? And then what adjustments? How do I, you know, get in there, you know, and bring this to life?
Nice. Yeah. Have you guys gotten any, negative Christian pushback on your film, like from the church world?
I'll say this is, it's been mostly in, comments of people who haven't seen the movie. When we were doing our marketing campaign, cause we were in 38 theaters in March. We went out and we were in 38 theaters across the country. And I would argue the bulk of it has been positive feedback. People just love we're doing something different. We're trying something different. My parents even took a lot of people from their kind of older church in the Midwest to go see it. They did multiple groups went from my parents' church. My in-laws took four groups of people from their church, you know, from Indiana and the Midwest. And my parents reported back that they go, there was an older guy that watched the film. And afterwards, he was crying hysterically. And like crying out of control. And he was a bit embarrassed and had to go to a corner. And he came back to the group and he's like, it just shows that nobody is too far from God, that everybody can have a relationship. And so that was, I would argue, the bulk of what we got from people. And the other aspect were comments on Facebook on our ads that hadn't seen the movie or experienced the movie. And so I there was one day that we were on two podcasts. We were on one with deconstructed people, right? From who left, you know, deconstructed from the faith, or, you know, are spiritual, but they're not, you know, don't consider themselves Christians. They watched the movie. Really loved the movie. We had a great talk. The next podcast the same morning was with a guy who was dealing with church hurt, a lot of church trauma and things going on in the church. Watched the movie, loved the movie. It was like, this is going to help a whole bunch of people. Then that night I get on Facebook and a woman goes something like, was it, you're in bed with Satan pushing a false gospel narrative. I pray for your soul or something like that. Yeah. I'm just like, geez, lady, you haven't even seen the movie. You haven't given it a shot. But I would say the bulk of those comments, I would try to go back and forth with in a kind, respectful way. And the majority of them, after we got through it, they'd say, well, I'll be praying for your movie, or I hope it reaches somebody, even if I disagree with it, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so I think that's what's really cool, is that, like, this discussion of art within the church has just not happened for, like, the last, like, 2-3 decades even, where it's just like we've assumed the, like, pure flicks model, where it's like faith and family are the same thing. And so anything that has deviated from that is like ostracized. And it's like, no, 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 it's too far. And so I think what's really cool is with films like Jesus Revolution that came out last year, like there's an overdose scene in Jesus Revolution. Again, that movie is still a little Hallmarky or so, but I would say it was more raw than I've ever seen.
So that's cool.
Yeah. It was cool. But it was more raw and authentic than I feel like I've seen a faith film in theater, you know, with that amount of success. Father Stew came out, you know, the I think last year was an R-rated Catholic, you know, film. And then even The Chosen, what The Chosen's been doing. And The Chosen, you know, obviously still not R-rated and raw, but it's, again, pushing for more authenticity than I feel like I've seen within the Christian film world. And so I like that with this discussion, there's going to be some friction, right, where we're trying to figure out, like, not everything that's faith needs to be faith and family. And it's okay for there to be this other aspect to that, you know?
Yeah, the actual struggle. I mean, you know, faith in general is a struggle. And just to pretend like there's not a, even for me, you know, my whole life is about, you know, dedicated to helping people with their faith. But if I would be dishonest saying I don't struggle. Right. And I think a lot of times we try to perpetuate a faith without struggle, but that was never the intention. I mean, Israel obviously means wrestles with God. So, I mean, you have this, there's a need there. And I mean, you read scripture. I mean, 90% of the Old Testament is like rated R, and it's it's a difficult text, and there's a whole bunch of difficult stories. And so, doesn't Shia LaBeouf have one coming out? Does he have a Christian Father movie?
Pedro. Padre. I think it's out.
Is it out?
It's out. There's another. I haven't seen it yet.
I'm assuming it's rated R. I feel like Shia LaBeouf only does rated R movies nowadays.
I love that. Well, it's so funny. I was just thinking about that, you know, there's these movies that kind of paint the picture of faith, that faith is there to take the struggle away. And I'm just, that's just never felt true, because life is hard. there are moments when it feels not so hard. There's moments when it feels really hard, but so it's just, life always has this ebb and flows. And I've always felt like faith is there to help you with that struggle. I don't think it takes it away ever, you know, because you always see these people, they're wealthy, gallivanting around the world, and you think they're not having a struggle, but they I guarantee you they do, you know, even though you think they don't. But it's just, we always think that there's this, you know, threshold that we can cross, that, you know, where we won't struggle anymore. And this is just not reality. Or it's at least not my experience of it. Anytime I've accomplished a goal or gotten something I wanted, I still struggle, you know? So it's just sort of, surrendering that, yeah, life is going to have its ebbs and flows, but you know, we have this thing that we can lean on when things are hard, and also when things are good, when, you know, that can show us gratitude, and you know, when,
yeah.
I remember listening to a podcast with a pretty famous, I think it was like a Christian rock guy or something like that, that deconstructed and documented his whole movement, you know, over to atheism. And I'm not trying to critique him, but something he said, I stuck with me as something nice, where he's like, I realized that Jesus was an accessory. Mm-hmm. He was like a watch, or he was like a cufflink or a necklace. And you know, and that I didn't need that accessory. And I think what hit me is that Jesus is in religion and belief, it doesn't need to be an accessory. It needs to be your lifeline. It needs to be your parachute. Mm-hmm. That like when stuff hits the fan, it's not just that, oh, I can get rid of my watch or my ring or my whatever. It's no big deal. It's the thing that I hold on to when everything is going wrong. And I think that's where when it's faith films and Christian And it's like when faith films and music kind of like gloss over the hardship or gloss over the reality, it makes you feel like, well, is there something wrong with me that my life is so much harder than what I see on the Christian film screen? Why did my cancer not get healed? Why did this not just wrap up in a bow for me? And that's something even in our film, it's like, whether you like, we had, okay, here's one critique when we did a screening, we did a Q&A, and someone was like, I really wanted to see her like run to her mom and like hug her at the end and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, that's just not what happened. I was like, you know, and their relationship was a struggle and a wrestle, you know, at continuing after that. And so I really like two things I really wanted to do was not fully resolve anything, but also the other thing was not paint anyone as a villain or a good guy, is that every character hopefully in our film has moments where they do bad things and moments when they do good things. And just because I think that's so much more honest to the world that we live in than this idea of like, oh, this group of people who do these bad things, they're all just bad and nothing good can ever come from them. Or, you know what I mean? Or this like there's a specific moment where her stepdad's like yelling at her and he's pissed at her for something she's done. And I really wanted to have a moment, because it's like he has like one scene and then he's like a voiceover in another scene, you know?
Yeah.
But I was like, I really want to make sure we don't just paint like, oh, he's this abusive, terrible dad that's yelling at his daughter. So we have a turn in that scene where he stops and he's like, I'm sorry I said this. I believe in, you know, I love you. I'm believing. Because I didn't want us just to easily say, oh, that's that evil religious person. You get what I'm saying? And or that's that drug addict that can't ever give any wisdom because they're just a druggie that can't ever do any good. You know, like that's just not the reality I've lived in my experience. So,
yeah,
you did a good job teetering that line, because I did notice that little spot too, where he had that moment. I was like, oh, he's going to be the bad guy. But you didn't. And that, I think that's refreshing to me, is there's growth to characters, even if they're like brief and, introductory here and there. You did a great job with that too. The question I was going to ask is, you haven't, like you said, you haven't only done Christian movies. You've done, you know, many other things. What has drawn you to do these? 'Cause obviously you don't have to go down that rabbit hole of trying to make what people would, you know, a good Christian movie, which what draws you to it?
I think for me, you know, even in our, like we did a slasher film called Made Me Do It. We did that one a little while ago. And even with that one, I wanted to do where it's like, could Jason Voorhees or Michael Myers be redeemed in a way, or Norman Bates? You know what I mean? It's like, you know, and so in everything I do, whether it's Christian or not, I would say it has those themes in it, you know, in some way, just because it's it's part of me, is that I can't just let, like, we have a boxing film coming out that has a couple of faith moments in it, but, you know, ends a little darker maybe in some ways. And anyway, just try to incorporate things like that throughout whatever genre I'm working in. But I think it was one of those things I had kind of hidden away from the Christian space for a while and been like, we'll just do other genres and won't touch it. Like, it can be integrated, but we're not going to make a Christian movie, right? You know? Mm-hmm. And I felt like when we heard this story and I showed it to my wife, I felt like it was one of those things that it touched on so many aspects of everybody's been hurt or burned by the church or a Christian of some kind in their life, at least in the Western world. the idea of it being God that redeems her. It's not that a church saves her. It's not that a person saves her. It's that God, she has an encounter with God and she feels love. That's what gives her this other route she could possibly take. And I felt like it just did it in this way that wasn't bashing anyone over the head. Like one comment we've gotten that was from someone who was not a Christian. I don't think, because it's hard to tell, but they were like, it didn't even deal with enough of like church hypocrisy. You know, it's like, we didn't even like see it all. And I'm over here just like, but do you, you're like, yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm like, do you really need to see that? Like pastor being like, you suck. You know, it's like, you know, it's like there's enough hopefully in the tone of what she's experiencing that you're able to get it or at least put your own experiences on to her experience. You know what I mean? And so that was for us, like, I'll tell you what really spurred it was I love what A24 does. If you know the movie company, they're an indie film company. They do like Everything Everywhere All at Once and a lot of other just amazing films. But they did a movie called Moonlight that won Best Picture 4 years ago now, 5 years ago. Anyways, it's called Moonlight and it's basically about a black gay kid in Florida in like the poverty area of Florida and him wrestling with his identity within these cultures, within this culture he's raised in. And the film never feels like propaganda. It never feels like it's pushing an agenda. It's simply following one kid along this journey of trying to discover who he is or aspects of himself. And my wife and I watched it and I go, this is how to make a Christian movie. I was like, why? How? I'm like, how come, like, you know, and here I am, this like white suburbs kid, you know, from the Midwest, like, and I'm relating so much to this kid's journey because you're just letting me be with him, right? Yeah. You're letting me be with this journey and his struggle that he's in. And I was like, we need to use Moonlight as like a template for how do we tell some stories of faith where it's like they may have a slower pacing. It may be more day in the life. We may have these more intimate moments with them wrestling instead of just like, it's fixed. It's fixed. Everything's good. And hitting these beats that we hit a lot of times in the faith world. So that was honestly our big, once we saw that movie, we're like, we got to use this as our template. And then that paired with my friend's testimony. We're like, okay, this is our time to try it and to do it the way we felt like we should do it. And yeah, it's been cool to see the reaction from people. So,
yeah, I told Jesse when I came in today, I said, oh, it had a very A24 feel to it. There's some,
oh, there you go.
Some neon colors in there, you know, there's some, it's a little gritty, you know, little, yeah,
there you go.
Long shots, long scenes. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's always been a movie fan. Movie fan. We're in a film studio right now. Actually, I'm a photographer and I don't own the building, but I just appreciate like the process of it all too. Like the acting, the lighting, like some of that stuff. I was just like, oh, that's nice. That's nice. So good job on that.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. Was Moonlight Moonlight wasn't A24, was it?
No, it was A24.
Are they? Okay. That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was their first Breakers, right? Spring Breakers was their first one.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Back in the day. But that's where it's like, you know, and I talk about the indie film world has been able to make weird movies for a very long time, right? Just like the normal indie film world has been able to experiment and do weird things. Mm-hmm. And the Christian film world has just never done it. And so that's where I'm over here like, let's make Christian movies kind of weird and like let people tell stories that they feel like they should tell from their point of view. That it's like there are so many, I know, especially young filmmakers who are Christians that are terrified to share anything about faith, anything about their experience, because they're worried it's going to get ripped apart by both general audience and the Christian audience, because the way they want to tell their story isn't this like traditional Christian format. And I'm like, why can't we make weird movies too and experiment with things and try things instead of it just having to be the same formula that we copy and paste, you know, over and over again. And not that formula needs to go away because it works, but it's like there can also be this other, it works with financially.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll put it
financially.
Yeah, yeah. It works.
Financially works.
But you get what I'm saying. Yep. Yep. So
that's good.
Yeah. Well, isn't the, I could be wrong. Whoever did the Conjuring movies, aren't those they're brothers, right?
I've heard they're Christians. Yeah.
Yeah. They're Christian guys. Yeah.
What was that?
And it's Blumhouse, right? Is it the Blum brothers who did that? Is that who it is? I don't know.
No, it's the writers. It's the writers, I think, who do it are two Christian guys.
Yeah.
Who do the Conjuring, at least the first two Conjuring films. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they, and I think you're seeing more experimentation. I think even with like stuff Angel Studios is doing, they're trying some different things. It still feels like to me, and this is not, I mean, I didn't see Cabrini, so I don't know.
I heard it was great. Did not see it.
Yeah, there's a film Ordinary Angels that came out too. We came out right between Cabrini and or Ordinary Angels and Cabrini. Our film came out, and it, sort of when anyone was like critiquing our R-rated faith film, in the back of my mind, I wanted to be like, listen, you got Ordinary Angels down the hallway and you got Cabrini just across the way. So you got two other options if you didn't want to see like R-rated faith film. So
yeah, that's funny. Well, that, I guess that's probably the danger of maybe the downside of doing an R-rated faith film is that people would go with the intended purpose to critique it and to criticize it.
Right, right, right.
You know, it's like when the Hobbit movies came out. People just went to be like, okay, let's criticize this movie up against Lord of the Rings.
I welcome that so much. Mm-hmm. Is that a weird response? Because I will say that I think that, you know, if at the very least it starts these conversations, then we've done our job. So yeah, if somebody's going to go to want to, you know, critique it, then great.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and like every little bit of that just gets more feedback from somebody. Like it puts it in somebody else's face. Every bad comment you get, oh, John commented on this thing, and then I'll read that comment. So it just it helps regardless.
I mean, even our podcast, I mean, we're not like super popular, but
we're huge.
We're huge. No,
huge.
We're
huge.
Number one. Huge. Number one in the Rockford area. The Rockford
Christian market.
But when we first started it, of course, like all podcasts during the pandemic, we toyed with like, hey, we can't let people know we're doing this because this might bring some blowback. And we eventually were like, yeah, screw it. whoever wants to listen can listen.
The way we approach this is that we've said before is like we want kind of people to peek in at how we just interact with each other on the couch on a Saturday night having some beers. And that isn't always beautiful language and beautiful topics.
Right,
and
right.
Like it's just reality. And again, it's like that's kind of how the movie is approached there too. It's just this is reality. It's not we're not just like these perfect little people all the time. So I was always paranoid.
We were asked, I think, why the cursing?
Yeah,
and then we were just like, well, it's how people talk.
That's how I talk.
Yeah,
it's really all it is. It's just how people talk.
Yeah.
Little do they know if they were in a church staff meeting.
I know.
The things that are said.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of swearing.
You wouldn't say them on from the pulpit, but the things talk about.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting. Even our pastor down here, you know, we hadn't. He watches everything through VidAngel, right? So he cleans up a lot of his movies and things. And I sent him our film. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear back from him for like a week, and I was terrified because I'm just like, oh crap! And I tried to like warn him. I'm like, hey, this is why we did this, and blah blah blah. And he came back. He's like, I had to let you sweat for a little bit. But he's like, I loved it, man. He's like, this thing's incredible. And he was like telling everybody about it. And he even did a post where he's like, listen, if you don't like language in your movies, he's like, I guarantee you I've watched less language than all of you in the movies I consume because I put it through VidAngel. He's like, but I'll tell you to go see this one. And I was just like, it meant a lot that it was like he got the vision. I think especially being a pastor, even if you don't use language, when you're counseling people or you're stepping into the realities of the world, I think every pastor who's seen our film that we've like been on a podcast or talked to, they've given us the thumbs up on it because they know the realities of the world. They're not just only up there on Sundays preaching from the book. They're over here like getting called into things and being counseling people, and they're seeing the realities of the world. Yeah. And so I think that's where the more that we can just be upfront and honest about that and all, like we even talk about like, what is it? On the Christian radio, it's like all you can get away with is like, I had these trials and they were really dark. And it's like, well, okay, but what were they? Tell me exactly what they were. And it's like, we can't.
And then the rain fell.
And washed it all away. How long did the rain have to fall here, guys?
What did it wash away? What did it wash away?
Well, and was it even someone we were talking to talked about how Men are allowed to go up and give their testimonies and share some of the rawness of their testimonies, but women aren't in our in a lot of church culture, because if you go up and you share some of these things, you're called a slut, or you're called a this, you're called a that, you know, depending on what you've dealt with. Whereas men are like, well, it's more like, and I'm not saying
he struggles with like sexual issues.
It's more like, oh, you know, he's. And so people really talked about how refreshing it was for our movie to focus on a female character that's wrestling with these things and going through this stuff. And even we had a group, an older Christian women's small group, watch an early screener of the film, and they rated it really well and basically said, like, I knew of this person in college, or I struggled with this in college. And it's these women who have been in Bible study for decades and decades that have never felt like they could share some of the things that they went through or experienced. And the movie allowed them to be able to, you know, share some of that. And so I think that's the power of the, of what, you know, film and art.
I love
and
that, because there's even just trying, and we were talking about this morning before we got on with you, is just trying to get people locally to get on the podcast here with us, because we are very raw. We've had a lot of people say no because they're afraid of what, if somebody heard it, how that would sound, you know. But like, to break some of those walls down and be like, that's fine. That's the, maybe that's the problem, is that you're worried about what somebody will hear you say. Honestly, that's the problem. And like having movies like that, just to unveil that little bit of honesty instead of just like, oh, we're all Hallmark, it's fine. I think that, like, we just need it. Yeah.
That's what I would hope. That's what was one of my hopes for the movie, was that, it, you know, at least we can open this. We have this opening for people to be human and imperfect. And, you know, and it's a delicate line, because we have to stray, you know, it was a fine line between, you know, aggrandizing and glorifying certain things. And then I don't think depicting something is its aggrandizement. That's, you know, that's why I don't think so. You just have to be very, you have to be careful. But I just would hope that, you know, we're saying, hey, we're human, we're imperfect, you know, that doesn't make us immoral, bad people.
I mean, what if we all came
together in our imperfections? Wouldn't that be so fun?
Yeah, right.
I mean, the story. Go ahead.
No, I want to hear what you're going to say.
Oh, yeah. The story of the film, I mean, it reminds me of, so I'm a pastor's kid. And we have, there are seven of us kids. Of two of them are just about to graduate high school. The rest of us are in our mid-30s, mid to mid-40s. But my one brother, so the three of us who are adults, or the four of us who are adults, of my one brother is very that similar story. My parents weren't alcoholics. They were generally good parents, but my one brother was 2 years older than another brother of mine who was a quadriplegic who passed away. So that age gap was obviously, he's two, so he needs like deep parental stuff, but they also have this quadriplegic baby who my parents, so he kind of ended up going down drugs, alcohol, still struggles with a little bit. And after high school, we lived in Ohio at the time. I moved to Philly where my brother was living. He was like, oh, you should live with me. And I walked into his house and I was like, nah, man. It was like the psychedelic sheet, you know, it was of the, like, everything. I was like, nah, this isn't, but he lived that life, and he's come back, you know, a little bit to the family over the past couple of years, but he lived that struggle of, you know, deep, I don't know, ingrained problems with how we grew up in his mind, specifically, and relational things with parents and stuff like that. And so that it definitely, I could feel that tension, and that's a real story. I mean, it just so happens that myself and my two other brothers are all pastors. So, there's three of us who went full on, like, just leaned in. My one brother who was disillusioned came out, but over time he's slowly coming back, slowly, you know, not that it's like the most important. I guess it is the most important thing, but I mean, but not, but allowing him to come back on his own terms rather than the guilt trip, rather than the, hey, clean up your life, clean up this. No. Actually, come back messy. It's okay to come back messy and, right. Allow us to walk with you in the mess because we're all messy on some point.
Even like you, though, it's like I guarantee your cussing, drinking Christian is not necessarily what you're raised with. Is you had to over time figure out what does faith look like in an authentic way in my life instead of putting on this front that I'm sure you've seen everybody do. Yeah. Or on the flip side of that, I know that there's this pressure that everybody's watching you as the pastor's kid within the congregation of how are they going to slip up? What did they do? Oh, pastor, I saw him do this or that. Mm-hmm. And so you have to find what is that authentic view of Christian or, reality for yourself. And I think that's where it's like the more pressure we put on people to have to fit in this box or this perfection. Yeah, obviously there's a level of accountability if you need it, but that isn't coming from a whole congregation watching a little kid as they're trying to figure out who they are. You know what I mean? And so that's a struggle. Like I know I was raised in a good Christian home and a good Christian environment. Yet what I remember from the church was as a kid, I went to a Baptist church and they had these parking cones and we were walking from Sunday school one time and I touched a cone that I was told I was not to touch and I did it. I know I belligerently did it. And the teacher slapped me across the face.
And that's
what I remember of that whole experience at that Baptist church, right? Mm-hmm. Is being slapped by this woman. And I'm sure there were great experiences that I had there. I remember and we ended up leaving and going to other churches over time. But it's like, I'm sure, but that's what I remember. And that's bizarre that these moments can that seem so just lame. They're not even big key moments. You know what I mean? It's like, I was not abused terribly within the church, yet that pain, I feel it when I said it to you guys, I felt it again in my soul, what that felt like. And I think that's one of those things. It's we need to be sharing, these bad moments stand out a lot of times more than the positive moments. And we need to be sharing those and getting those out instead of hiding them and letting them fester. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Cause letting things stew, it only leads to eventually the stew's going to boil over and it's going to be bad. Yeah. That's always, if you're not living truthfully and you're hiding anything, whether it's whatever community, and it's not just the church. This could be friends, community, school, community, whatever community you're in, you're always being a little bit reserved. You're reserving parts of yourself because there's an innate fear of being judged. And if there's one place where that should never be, even though it is almost always, it should never be the case is in the church, right? I think it was, who was it? Yeah, I don't know. It might be Eugene Peterson, maybe somebody along those lines said something like, the church is to be a hospital. It's not to be it's not to be the clouds, essentially. It's to be a place where we could all come, share our mess, share it together, embrace our own messes, and then as a community, move forward and into the future. But the church, obviously the church in America specifically, doesn't act like that. We like to judge people.
I think it's getting better though. The younger generations are being more raw. And I would say, I want to bring up a story for Courtney real quick is that, she talked about when she came into this film, she had kind of this baggage from experiences in the church. And one thing she ended up going to the church with which it's based. And what'd you see, Courtney? What was the emotional moment you had?
Oh yeah. Oh, for one, really quick, that was one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard about what the church should be, and I absolutely agree. I mean, I've always said this about the Christian message at its core is so beautiful. It's one of great empathy, great connection, great community. It just gets muddied and covered up. If we just peeled back everything else at the core, it's just this community that's just that's beautiful, that can do amazing things. And then if we unpacked it all, the impact can be more.
Yeah.
How do we grow? How do we be better? And then, but back to that story, I would say, being an angsty teenager that kind of bled all the way into my 20s, all that angst, you know, I did have to, in order to get to a character that did want that connection with Jesus Christ, the, you know, that image, that, that, and have this faith, I did have to dismantle, whatever cynicism had built up in that decade or so of, oh, you know, this organized religion thing. And, you know, I had built up my own walls, but I had to dismantle mine so I could see at all Riley's, Riley's walls. And then because ultimately hers were hers are made.
You're good.
Might almost be dismantled. But yeah, and then, so it was funny, you know, you're supposed to just do this actor homework, you know, all right, fine. I'm doing a faith film. I'm playing a Christian who's struggling with her faith. I should go to church. And it was really just some actor homework I was going to go do. And I was like, okay, well, the best church to go to is the one that the character goes to. And so I went to Mariners Church down in Orange County. And then, see, I was running late. No, I was just, you know. Oh yeah, great. Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. I was running late. I was just sort of just going to do my homework. And then when I pulled up, they had already started the service and there was a band playing and I hear it start the music as I'm walking up to the church and it's beautiful. I was like, "Oof." And I just felt, and it just kind of hit me. I didn't realize, I was not expecting to get as emotional as I got. And then I walk in and I wasn't, I didn't know, honestly, I should have looked up more about Mariners Church, and but I didn't realize it was like huge. There's big auditorium, thousands of people on their feet, this beautiful music being played in the name of Jesus Christ. And I just, it would just hit me. I was just, that it's irrefutable how beautiful this is. How thousands of people, arms in the air in the name of this, a singular thing, singular purpose. And I, there's just, to behold something like that, it was just another, you know, I had already been tethered to the movie, just sort of some other conversations, but it was another big moment as I stepped into this world, as I stepped into the community and I, you know, and into this, this life of this character. Unbelievable.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. It's funny. One of the things we do at our church, our small little eclectic hipster church, we do a thing called Theology Pub, which happens once a month. And we started it, well, it was started for a short period of time before I got here, and then we restarted it. And it became really just an avenue for people to be themselves. Hey, this is actually what I think about. What pick a controversial topic. Now there are more controversial topics in 2024 than there were in 2019. But pick a controversial topic and then just lay it out on the table. And we're not going to give you an answer. We're not going to give you a way to think. We're not going to teach you those. But we've had a few atheists come. We've had a few, you know, people part of the LGBTQ community who are distinctively part of that. And it's just, I finally found a place where I could just share, just be, without judgment, without preconceived ideas, without somebody trying to convert me or somebody trying to, you know, force me into this box. And I think that's kind of what Jesus did 2000 years ago, was he didn't force anybody into a box. In fact, he kind of tore down the box in many ways. And, you know, there's some theological nuances there, of course, but he tore down that box that so many people felt was separating them from that relationship, the relationship with God, relationship with others. And that box, as those walls are being torn down, I think, and Ben, as you were saying, I think the younger generation is going to slowly get it. You know, you got to let them, mature a little bit and do those things. But yeah, I think there is a definitive need for movies like this. We don't need God's Not Dead 4 or whatever. Like we need like real movies. Like we need real stories, real movies, real struggles, something that people could actually relate to who don't live in the Southeast.
Yeah. Well, and I think you're seeing it even on, especially if you follow anyone on Instagram. I know that, you know, the social media has good and bad things, but I don't have specific people to mention, but I feel like I hear a lot of like Christian music coming from Instagram that they don't even call themselves Christian really anymore. It's like, you know, I'm a Christian who does this music and it's bold and it's like wrestling with things and it's not clean and it's not stuff you're ever going to hear on the radio, but they're kind of like, screw it. Like, I'm going to start putting these through things through this way and being real about it. And I think there's something so powerful that I think even what's hard is when you really read the story of Jesus and some of his parables and some of his teachings is he's intentionally vague, not vague, but mysterious. I'll put in a lot of the things that he tells. And he's pretty, I don't want to say confrontational. That might come off a little harsh, but at some points he's like, I don't care if you get it. And two, I kind of want to make you feel a little frustrated that you don't get it or you're wrestling with these things. Yeah. And I think when you look at a lot of traditional Christian art in our current world, is it's meant to make you feel safe and comfortable and not, you know, push you outside the box and, you know, not make you wrestle with things. And I think a lot of people walked out of our film with questions and wrestling. And I think it was really cool to see people. And I think that's one of our critiques too from people, but I think that's good. Do you know what I mean? That it's like, we're intentionally keeping things a little bit more vague. We're not giving you all the answers and we're kind of being confrontational and not a way to like intentionally make you mad, but just say like, we're not going to fit into this box. Like, when my parents were like, I'm going to bring people from our church, I was like, oh boy. Like, I had a moment because I'm just like, you know, we don't, you know, what is the lamb? What is this white Jesus thing going on? What's this voice she's hearing? Did this pastor who prayed with her in another country, what was the deal with that? Had someone told her something? It's like, you know, it's like, I told my dad, I was like, I don't remember a more confrontational film than ours short of The Passion of the Christ. I remember The Passion of the Christ coming out and people being like, who is this like devil character and why are there demons popping up near Judas and all this like weird stuff that like Mel Gibson chose to throw in his Jesus story. And I was like, I don't remember like a faith film being like that confrontational since then. And so I don't know.
Remember the devil baby?
Devil baby. Yeah. That was wild, dude.
Yeah.
So anyways,
I have to ask one last question because I want to let you guys go soon. I don't want to monopolize your time, but what was the last word that she says at the end? Was it fuck or was it?
Yeah.
Okay. I couldn't tell. Like, I rewound it again and again. I was like, I think it is. And then I was like, if it is, that's a great ending. But
it really is. It's like, oh, okay. This is okay. Yeah.
Well, and that was one of those things that we went back and forth with a little bit. Even Courtney and I talked about it a little bit as we edited it. You know, we were going to send it out. We're like, do we keep it in? Do we just let it like cut quiet? And what we really realized is it's like, and even some of the people that we did at our Q&A did not like the word at the end. They were like, oh, you know, it didn't show a life change and it didn't show all these things. And I'm just like, yeah,
it does.
I was
it
like, does, because somebody who has gone through this experience, how would they express that they've had this moment? You know what I mean? It wouldn't be all of a sudden, like one of the ladies said, like, I wish she just like threw up her hands and said like, oh God, you know, or something. And I'm just like, I was like, what do we say? We have 90 minutes basically of her in reality, like wrestling with these things in a real world, trying to make it as authentic as possible. If at the end of the movie, all of a sudden it's throwing up our hands and being like, oh God, then we've lied to the audience or we've tricked them. We've bamboozled them. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, what's our field scene? What's our moment that can still be a supernatural type moment, but have it still feel grounded in the world she's in and who she is. So.
No, and it's so funny. Ben was actually very intentional with his directing because I had a lot of impulses to get on my knees in that moment. I was like, I want to get on my knees. And he was like, nope. And I was like, I had all the impulses to put my arms up. Yeah. And then he was like, nope. And then I even presented the idea. What if she doesn't say it? Can we do a couple of takes where she doesn't say it?
Yeah.
And then
we did.
And that's another thing why you're so generous, Ben, because I do get takes from me, which is great. Yeah. But Aronofsky does that. Like, he'll do this take for you. I've heard that in some interviews before.
Yeah. Speaking of gritty films.
Yeah. There you go.
Darren Aronofsky.
Yeah.
But what was the thing? Because we talked about how, like, the experience is in here. It's not this, like, physical thing. It's the spiritual, internal thing. Mm-hmm. And,
Well, I think just ending that way.
It really was your intention, Ben, it just even through your directing and your voice, because it's so funny because you're dealing with the actor who, like, is wanting to do all those things. You're like,
and I think
like,
in some,
no, it's good.
In some way, I think like a deep spiritual encounter, spiritual awakening, whatever you want to call it, the reaction often is fuck.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, exactly. Gosh.
You know,
because then you're over here just like, what? Like, we kind of want to leave with, like, what am I going to do with this? Yeah, like, yeah. I've been given this experience. What am I going to do with it now? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And the reality hits you.
How do I go?
You're like,
how do I go back to my friends and share this? What does this mean for what I'm going to go back to and who I'm going to be? How do I tell my mom this? You know what I mean? It's just like, anyways, I feel like it was the most honest way to show her realizing she had this experience.
And that's the hardest thing, I think, with the mom. It's, you know, I think every kid has a somewhat of a fear of going to a parent in vulnerability, because there's the fear of, I told you so.
Yeah. Right?
And so there's the fear of, like, oh, now I'm going to get lectured about, I told you so, for the next couple of hours. So I think, that's actually a good, I like that a lot, actually.
Yeah. Cool.
I'm going to use that on Sunday, by the way.
Well, thank you guys so much. Is there, where can, anyone who wants to watch the movie, is there somewhere they can find it or look for it, or when, you know,
if you go to pastorskidthemovie.com, we'll update the website. We've submitted to Amazon Prime, so it'll be up on Prime to rent and purchase probably in the next 2 to 3 weeks. So it should be up. And then after that, probably it'll go out onto some of the other platforms. So Prime's kind of our main one that we're getting it out on. So yeah, it should be up. Look, in the next probably month, it'll be up there. And I can send you guys a link, but we'll update the website. So go to pastorskidthemovie.com. And once it's available for VOD, I'll put the link on there for people. Yeah. So.
And what's next for you guys? Anything fun, exciting?
Yeah, plug it.
We'll see. I have a horror thriller coming out called Kill a Prophet, and a boxing one coming out called Burn My Money. So those two are coming out. We submitted them to Amazon. We'll see when they're up. And then Courtney and I are always chatting about different projects and things. So you just never know what'll come out.
There might be another Bandico Coppin collab.
There you go.
We'll just have to see.
Nice. Is there anything you have on the horizon, Courtney?
On the horizon, you know, I mean, I shot a short film passion project with one of my dear friends back in November, and that just got a world premiere. I'm not allowed to tell.
I can't wait to hear it.
We are premiering somewhere later this year. He gave me a call and he was like, "Don't tell anybody," and I was like, "Fine." But we've got about that, and then, you know, I fell in love with screenwriting. I think a couple of years ago. So I've just been doing that and auditioning and, you know, just living my creative life.
There you go. Awesome.
Cool. Well, thank you guys so much for hanging with us for the last hour and a half or so. Definitely check out The Pastor's Kid once you can find it, Amazon Prime, and anywhere else. So it's definitely, our last review was of
a week away, which was like the Netflix.
Okay,
like,
what'd you think?
We Where ripped it guys? Apart pretty bad.
It was, but it was I'll like my childhood.
I'm gonna tell you one scene though. When they're around the bonfire and they sing the Awesome God song, that got me, guys. It got me hard. And then the rest of the movie is obviously, you know, High School Musical Christians. So I'm not the audience for that, right? Like I understand that, you know, they did. That scene around the fire when they're like singing, was it like the God Only Knows for King and Country song? I still watch it sometimes. I get on YouTube and I'm just like, this is what we can do with our films. Because it's just like, you know, just having that question, you know, it's like you're questioning things and it not being perfect. But then, anyways, yes.
Yeah.
It's but definitely then they go and High School Music.
They sneak out and make out in a very Christian way on the dock and everything, you know, it's very summer camp, right,
hands in view and everything.
Space for the Holy Spirit, I guess.
Well, thank you guys again. We really do appreciate you chatting with us. We'll hopefully talk in some point down the road, but congrats on the movie and
Dude, thanks, good job, guys.
It was really fun to watch. So we'll let you go. And with that, thank you, guys.
Thanks awesome. For having
thank
us.
You.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. All right.
Appreciate you all.
Bye. Cool. Well, that was... Jen says, nice job.
The film is I mean, it's gritty. There's some swearing. There's some drugs. There's real life.
Yeah.
And yeah. So if you're over the age of 50, probably... and white and
not evangelical, around your kids,
you probably won't like it. Yeah.
That's the only, yeah, exactly. You probably won't like it, but otherwise, give it a shot. I think it would, it's definitely pushes the limits of a normal Christian movie as far as I'm concerned. So,
yeah.
Anyway, we'll let that be. Just go look it up. So, there's nothing really to say on my normal tech. Keep questioning your movie choices. Check this one out.
Yeah. It's better than God's Not Dead.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, it's better than pretty much all Christian movies. And then it's better than most movies you're watching on Netflix. I mean, it's well done.
Worth a quick watch. So
yeah, keep an eye out on Ben Ironside.
Coppin. I don't know that we got an official answer. You said Coppin, Coppin.
Yeah, he was like, yeah. I was like, okay.
But yeah, check them out, and we'll hopefully next episode we'll have Jen back. We'll see if she's recovered or dead. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, I'm Jesse.
I'm Evan.
I'm Jen.
And that was Christian A.F.
Thanks for listening and joining us on this week's show. If you'd like to support the podcast or just want to buy us a drink as an episode sponsor, check out our website at christianafpodcast.com.
While you're on the site, feel free to send us a message. We appreciate hearing from each one of you. Our hope with this podcast is to develop a community where you can openly question your faith, church, beliefs, and more.
Also, don't forget to find and follow us on social media at christianafpodcast. Share our episodes with your friends to help grow our community. We're always looking for questions, stories, or podcast ideas. You can send these to us via email at christianafpodcast@gmail.com or through our social media channels. So until next time,
stay curious,
stay connected,
and keep questioning.